The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Blessed, you God who is teaching Torah to his nation of Israel. Now what is this idea? What am I praying for? What am I praying for? Please God, make the Torah sweet in my mouth. What is that supposed to mean, sweet in my mouth? So on one hand, of course, desirable when you taste something sweet. Alright, you want more? But on a deeper level, what makes something sweet? You know, I have a niece who loves olives and lemons. She loves olives and lemons. You know, when she goes to the synagogue, and there is, you know, there's always someone in the synagogue who gives out candy, the candy man. Okay. So she goes to the candy man, he gives out candy and gum. She looks at him with sad eyes, she says, "No lemons? No? How about olives? Pickles?" For her, that's sweet. Taste is very private. Taste is very personal. Very individualized. What you like to eat, I might not like to eat. I like, maybe you don't like. Well, what is the philosophy of eating? Right. Certain foods are compatible with who I am. Some foods are not. There's even a philosophy of eating in terms of understanding people's psychology, because you know, there's some people, when they make a sandwich, what do? They cut these two very thick pieces of bread, and they put something very thin between them. Other people, they cut these very thin, thin pieces of bread, right, just so that it doesn't get their hands dirty. Very different eating habits. Why? Because eating is so personal, so individualized, and it must be compatible with me. Now recognize, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, please God, make your Torah sweet in my mouth, and the mouth of all your nation of Israel. What am I praying for? How could this infinite wisdom relate to me? How could a book 3,200 years old relate to me in the 20th century? And how could a book that's given to the whole people relate to an individual, unique person like myself? I pray, please God, make the Torah sweet. You know what frightens people about Judaism? It's going to rob me of my individuality. That's something that people really hope for dear life. We want to be individuals. And yet we see from this prayer, it's the opposite. That we actually pray that the Torah should relate to us in our unique individuality. Now how can that be? How can the Torah so old? I mean, by now it must be stale. How can Jews be studying Torah? Well, you see, very often, people are under the impression that the Torah is eternal. That's not true. The Torah is more than eternal. We understand that the Torah is timeless. What's the difference between eternity and timeless? You see, eternity is a statement in time. That something is frozen in time. And somehow, it goes beyond the principles of time. Beyond the principles of time. And somehow it just contradicts time. Time goes on. This doesn't go on. This is frozen. Now that gives me the understanding that in order to appreciate Torah, I must go back in time. That once upon a time, there were a people and a prophet, and they had an encounter, a divine encounter, historical event. And in order to plug into that, I must go back in time. And that I must look like I came from centuries of the past in order to be an authentic Jew. The truth is, if I really would go back in time, I'd probably look like a real hippie. Because I would have a toga and sandals. But, you know, in our days, people think, you know, a Jew means you have to look like you're from the last century. Right? You don't have to. There are some who do. There's nothing wrong with that. But understand that this feeling that I have to go back in time and only trust the past is based on this misconception that the Torah is eternal, something frozen in the past, and to get to it, I've got to go backwards. And who wants to go backwards? But you must understand that the Torah is timeless. Eternity is past, present, future. It's the past that carries over into the present, into the future. The past is frozen, defies the rules of time. Timeless is in the ever-present now. Timeless is beyond past, present, and future. It's always now. It's always here. And therefore, the Torah, the Jewish people believe being timeless means right now there's an encounter with God. Right now, what I need to know in this generation, in terms of who I am, I can know. Because the Torah is transcendental. Meaning that it's so high that it not only relates to a community, but every individual will find the unique direction they need in their unique relationship with God. That's an amazing idea. In every moment in time, to every unique individual, we believe that the revelation of the divine word will be to you. You can actually pray, make it sweet in my mouth. May I plug into the timelessness of Torah and hear it right here, right now. And each commentary, you know, was that really written in the Torah? Each unique individual brings into the world a new understanding of Torah because of their unique relation with God as revealed through the Torah. And you know, in every generation, new insights. Commentaries would write about the insights that Torah offers us today in our unique situation in our history. And everyone knows it's a basic idea that the rabbi will talk about the portion of the week and relate it to the particular political things that are happening in the world. Why? Why would you expect to be connected? There's a fundamental mystical idea that every Torah portion of the week is actually telling us something about this week, right now. This week, right now. The guidance of I am God, you are God, is being communicated. If I get involved in the Torah, to me, in my unique situation, and in our unique situation, in this period of time. So, you know, generally people are afraid of religion. Ah, it's going to rob me of my individuality. This book is so old. This book is for so many people. Could it relate to me? The Jewish people believe the transcendental book relates to each unique individual. And that in fact, there are 600,000 interpretations of the Torah which are all authentic. And that there are actually 600,000 archetype souls that combine into the nation of Israel. Each and every one of us has our portion, our unique connection to the Torah. So, in our day and time, people associate individuality with dress. And if they walked into a yeshiva and they said, is Yosef here? They say, Yosef, what does he look like? He has a beard and glasses. Right? And there's a sense that, you know, all Jews look alike, or all religious Jews look alike. Well, that's because people evaluate individuality based on our dress, because dress is one of the most primary ways of expressing individuality, but really, not the true way. Individuality is expressed in much deeper ways than just clothing. I'm not suggesting that everyone has to dress the same, but we do have to qualify that similar dress is not necessarily an anti-individualistic statement. The Torah relates to the Jewish people. And each individual the Jews believe finds themselves in the Torah. And a study hall, rather than rob a person of their individuality, it actually restores to them. Because a Beit Midrash, a Torah study hall, There's not a library where I'm sitting and I'm concentrating and I'm studying. But if you go into a Beit Midrash, what do you see people doing? It says this in the Tosfot. No. It says this. No, what are you talking about? This is the interpretation. No. It actually cultivates self-assertiveness and humbleness. But self-assertiveness. In fact, the entire Talmud is one book with arguments and arguments, disputes. Yet it's one book. That is the beauty of the Jewish people. That we believe in the possibility for a unified community, not at the expense of the individual, and yet an individual not at the expense of community. The possibility for the two. It's an amazing idea. And then here you have this one book, and yet there are disagreements, and yet one book, one community. And especially Jews, try and make Jews, try and rob them of their individuality. We all know two Jews, three opinions. We all know that there was a Jew living on an island, all by himself. And he had two synagogues. Someone comes to the island and says, "You live here alone?" He said, "Yeah, I feel good." "How many synagogues do you have?" "Two synagogues." "Why do you have two synagogues if you live here alone?" Says, "One synagogue I go to, and the other synagogue I would never go to." Right? Jews have character. And the Torah does not in any way ask the forfeiting of Jewish character. You should know that it was Torah that cultivated character. When people studied Torah, they made statements. They interpreted and they had the right and the guts to say, "I believe this is what it means," and yet it's out of love. And you can walk into a Torah study hall, and it looks like people are fighting. I mean, sometimes it's really frightening. You know, they get on chairs, they say, "No, what are you talking about?" And they start fighting. You know what's so amazing? You would think that this is a wrestling match. And you know, they close their Talmud, and they put their arm around each other, and they walk out. Friends, that's beautiful. That's Judaism. That's Judaism. Different people. Unique individuals, and yet one community. One people. You know, Torah, when it's properly taught, could not become a cult. Because when you're really involved in Torah, what are people teaching you? How to ask questions. And as long as you're asking questions, you'll never lose yourself. So the process of Torah was always considering individuality, not only considering it, but cultivating it, drawing it out, making it real. Individuality is crucial in Judaism, and community is crucial in Judaism. And we believe that the two are not conflicting. There's a story about a fellow, he was involved in Torah, and every time it was a published, a printed Chumash Bible. And you know, at the end of every verse there is a colon, two dots. So every time he came to the two dots, he said God's name. Why do you say God's name? Well, Rabbi heard him doing this. Said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, at the end of every verse I see the name of God, two yuds." Right? He thought the two dots were actually two yuds. The rabbi said, "Let me tell you something. How can you know when you see God's name?" He said, "When you see two yids," playing on the word yud for the letter yud, he said, "two yids, Jews, one on top of the other, it's not the name of God. But when you see two yids, one beside each other, there's the name of God. There's the name of God." Respecting each other's individuality, yet side by side. You know, the oral tradition teaches that every Jew is connected to one letter in the Torah. One letter in the Torah. And the law says if one letter in the Torah is missing, the entire Torah is no good. So too, if one unique Jew is missing, the whole community is lacking. But there's another law. What if you had all the letters of the Torah but two were touching each other. No good. Because not only does every unique individual have to be present in the community, but if two individuals are touching each other, they're cramping each other's style. Every individual has to have their space. Every letter has to have their space. Every unique individual in the community must be respected in their space. Individuality. It's crucial. Judaism are not these absolute dry laws. It's a living Torah. Because Judaism goes beyond absolute ethics or situational ethics. It includes the two. Because the process of halacha, which is called psak, is when you have a question, you go to a rabbi, and the rabbi must uniquely decide. Because there are various absolute values that we're playing with. And then we have to understand how it applies to this unique individual. And you know there are different rabbis with different halachic decisions, and yet it's one community. So Judaism has absolute values and laws, and yet still an element of situational ethics relating to the individual. And that's so beautiful. And so much more halachic responsa is being written each day relating to unique situations that are arising in each generation with each unique person. So therefore, what am I praying for? I'm saying, please God, make the Torah sweet in my mouth. May today I hear what I needed to hear. May I walk into the right class, open up the right page, hear the right words, and have the right to ask that. Because the Torah is God relating to man right now. I have the right to ask that. Amazing idea. The Ari, the famous mystical Kabbalist, the greatest Kabbalist probably that existed on earth, he would see on the forehead of his students each day a new verse of the Torah written on their forehead. Right? A verse on their forehead. And he would teach them the understanding of half that verse. And then, when they would go to sleep at night, they would wake up with the other half. Can you imagine that? Every day there's a new verse written on your forehead. And I can't tell you, sorry. I can't tell you. I see lines though, but I can't see letters. And the Ari was able to teach them that unique verse that related to their soul. And we believe, Tein Chelkeinu B'Torah, each person has their part of Torah that they uniquely relate to. If your soul comes from the world of action, you'll feel a deep connection to the scriptures. If your soul comes from the world of formation, the higher world, you'll feel this deep, deep connection to the Mishnah. But if your soul came from the world of creation, then your connection into the total world of Torah will be through Talmud. And if your soul comes from the world of emanation, then your entrance into the world of Torah is Kabbalah. Of course, all aspects of Torah relate to us, but each person needs to know the door that they enter into the relationship with God. And it's through that door they meet all the other parts of Torah. Rav Kook said about Bialik, you know, Bialik came from a very religious family, but he himself was not so religious. And he wrote one of the most beautiful books on Jewish Haggadah, Jewish Midrash. Rav Kook said, you know what's wrong? You know what happened to this very important soul? When he was in yeshiva, they just taught him Talmud. They just taught him Talmud. But his soul needed Midrash. Didn't relate to the uniqueness of who he is. Fundamental principle, teach your child according to their way. Because each person has their unique way, how they plug into the total world of Torah, but still a unique way. That is crucial. He said, they didn't relate properly to Bialik's real connection. Because the Talmud says that a person should study that which their heart desires in Torah. And through that, enter into the total world of Torah. Now, we have just prayed, make it sweet. What do we then say? Please, God, make the Torah sweet. Relate to us. Make it sweet in our mouths and the mouths of the whole nation. And we and our children We'll all know your name and study Torah for its namesake. What do you mean, know your name? What does it mean, my children? Fundamental idea in Judaism. Education starts before conception of your children. If the Torah touches me so deep, if that relationship between myself and God is so personal, so clear, reveals my unique nature in the context of that relationship, then you can be sure your children will get it. So we believe that before conception, you're already teaching your children. And your child will be born with a certain connection to Torah, according to the connection of Torah that you had achieved, the connection with God through the Torah. So therefore I say, make it sweet. And if that happens in that unique way, then my children will certainly know Torah. But what will we know? Very important. What is the purpose of studying Torah? To know your name. And we and our children will know your name, and then we will study Torah for its namesake, for the true purpose of it. What does it mean to know God's name? What is the meaning of a name anyways? So let's say you're standing at the Kotel, just got there. Some stranger comes up to you and says, excuse me, what's the time? I say, time. Okay, I'll tell you the time. It's 12:01. Then he says to you, oh, where are you from? Sure, time. Okay, I'm from the United States. Oh, what city? My city. Okay, New York. Right. What do you do for a living? Okay, I'm a lawyer. Right. How long are you in Israel for? I'm a person. Oh, okay, 2 more weeks. In fact, I have a meeting right now. I have to go. And as things are getting closer and closer, he comes in on you and he says, so, what's your name? Uh-oh, I knew this was coming. I knew it. And you get nervous. When you meet a person on the bus, the first thing you say to him, hey, what's your name? You're from, like, what's your name? Very often people have long conversations on the bus and then you feel uncomfortable saying, what's your name? You don't even know their name. You've been relating for so long, you didn't even ask them their name. Well, why do you feel uncomfortable? To know somebody's name means, and to give your name to someone means, I invite you into my world. It means if you call me, I'll respond. To tell you where I live is not a relationship. To tell you what I do is not a relationship. But to tell you my name, it means if you call me, I'll respond. I'm making room in my life for you. You know, I had a friend, drove me crazy, because he always used my name. And I have a friend that says to you, so Dave, how you doing today, Dave? Hey, Dave, you know, I was thinking, Dave. Dave, you want to go to a movie, Dave? Oh, Dave, that movie yesterday, Dave, was so great, Dave. Drove me nuts, you know why? Because you're getting a little too close. Right now you're using my name in vain. Excuse me for being so, you know. But I can't help it, you know, you're getting into my private space a little too much. Names enable relationship, and when people use too much names, bothers you. So a name means a relationship. And to study the Torah means to know God's name. That's the only reason to study it. I want to know God's name. What for? So I can call out. You can imagine, two people meet. Someone introduces you and says, this is Mr. Stein, and this is Miss Garfield. Oh, Miss Garfield, pleasure to meet you. Oh, Mr. Stein, it's truly a pleasure for me. Why don't you two go out for a cup of coffee? Miss Stein, would you mind going for a cup of coffee? No, Mr. Stein, I wouldn't mind at all. Okay. Well, they're sitting over coffee and things are going well. She said, Mr. Stein said, Miss Garfield, call me Robert. Oh, Robert. Oh, okay. Well, you know, you can call me Elizabeth. Oh, Elizabeth, oh, Robert. Oh, Elizabeth, oh, oh. And they continue the conversation. Things are going very nice. Relationship becoming more tighter. She says, you know, Robert, I was thinking, Robert, you know, my closer friends, they call me Rob. You can call me Rob. Oh, well, thank you. You can call me Beth. Well, Elizabeth, no, Beth. Oh, okay, Beth. Okay, Rob. Well, things are getting, you know, it's about the end of the evening, and it's very, very, going very well. and you say, "Well, Beth, I'd like to see you again." She says, "Call me Lizzie. My real close friends call me Lizzie." "Elizabeth? No, Lizzie. Well, you know, you can call me Bobby." "Oh, Bobby? Oh, Lizzie? Oh, okay, we'll get together tomorrow." Some things develop. Each name expresses a new type of relationship. Well, the next day they get together. "Hey, Lizzie. Hey, Bobby." Right? And they're sitting over coffee, and Lizzie says something that disturbs Bobby. Bobby says, "I'm surprised that you think that way." "Well, I didn't understand that." "Oh, well, Beth, I'm very surprised that you could say that thing." Well, Bob, I really think that maybe this is a little premature." "Well, Elizabeth, maybe you're right. We're going too fast. Robert, it was really a pleasure meeting you." "Miss Garfield, I wish you the best." "Mr. Stein, nice meeting you." Relationships, names, you know. That one of the deeper secrets of the Torah was knowing the names of God, their various names of God. At one time, Jews actually knew the different names of God because names evoke unique relationships. And in the deepest teachings, I want to know God's name. I'm learning the Torah in order to relate. In order to create that relationship, to know that name so I can call out. At one time, people knew the various names and how they evoked the unique kind of relationships that they expressed. This is the goal of Torah. When I study Torah for learning the names, then I'm studying Torah for its name's sake. That's what Torah is for. To learn the name. To relate. And if you will know God's name, then you will know all people's names. There's a story about Abu Yanti, who was one of the founders of the Sufi movement. Sufi movement. And Abu Yandit was studying with a student of his for 40 years. One day, Abu Yandit looks at his student and says, "What's your name?" He has been 40 years. Student looks at him and says, "Abu, I've been your student for 40 years. Abu Yandit said, "When the divine name has entered my heart, I have forgotten all other names." He's not Jewish. Because the Zohar says, every Jew's name is like the name of God. Once you learn the name of God, plug into the fundamental relation between the human and the divine, you will then know that every human being is valuable. And you will know to learn to remember everyone's name. So to learn Torah for its namesake is to learn God's name, and learning God's name includes learning all mankind's name, because every human being is created in the image of God. If you don't know how to relate to human beings, I can assure you, you don't know how to relate to God either. You haven't learned Torah because you haven't learned the name. So learning Torah for its name's sake is to learn it for the purpose of what it's here for. When people learn Torah in order to be a scholar, it's not Torah. It's not Torah. So very often, people learn Torah, they want to know wisdom, they want to know truth. I was once teaching a class in a yeshiva, we were learning Chumash. All of a sudden I got a very uncomfortable feeling. I said, "Everyone close their books. Why are you studying this?" I was amazed what people said. "I want clarity. I want wisdom. Right? I want some kind of psychological understanding of myself." Only one person said, "I want to know God." If you think you're going to learn Torah in order to be happy, you've got the wrong book. Learn Torah in order to be wise. Even to learn Torah in order to be moral is wrong. I learn Torah in order to effectualize a relationship with the source, with God. And we believe a person who has a living encounter with God, such a person has a context for living encounters with human beings, such a person will be happy. That's not the goal, that's a product. Such a person will be sensitive, will be moral. Because all those values in Torah, all the wisdom in Torah, all the guidance in Torah, is a derivative of that relationship with God, and only within the context of the relationship between the human and the divine do all those values really, really have meaning. So the first blessing prior to study of Torah is to get involved in Torah. I've been commanded to get involved with Torah. I approach the Torah with the concern to effectualize a relationship, and therefore the second blessing, now that I approach the Torah with the concern for a relationship with God, I want to relate to God. I have the right to pray and ask God to relate to me. And I say, blessed be you, God, who is teaching Torah to His nation of Israel. Not who taught Torah in the past, but who is teaching Torah right now. Right this very moment. Not to a stranger, but to His people. And when I study Torah with the concern for relationship, then I will hear the relationship of God to me. And I will have known the name of God. And I will always know how to call on God, in relation, and upon all my fellow men, in relation. Thank you.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.